Sure.
Great, thank you. I'm going to turn it over to Glenn to do it. Well, let me introduce. This is the April 14th call of the policy development process work team of the PPSC, and I will turn it over to Glenn to do a roll call.
Thank you, Jeff. On the call, we have Jeff Newman, who is chair of this group, Paul Dias from the Registrar constituency, Alan Greenberg, ALAC, Mike Rodenbach, Commercial and Business Constituency, David Maher, Registry Constituency, Wolf Ulrich Knoben, ISP Constituency, Bertrand de la Chapelle, GAC, James Gladel, Registrar, and Liz Williams from the Business Constituency. And for staff, we have Margie Marlin, Liz Gaster, and myself, Glenda Saint-Gerie. And I have not seen any regrets. Has anybody seen any? I think that's all. Thanks, Jeff.
Okay, thank you very much. Let me double check. So I've controlled the Adobe as well, but if I go to pull up some other papers, you guys can't see that, right?
Yeah.
Double checking. Okay, welcome to the call. The agenda for the call today is to dive into the substance of topic A, planning and initiation. That's going to be the heart of the call. We might want to take a minute or two at the beginning of the call to just address where we are on, just to readdress where we are on transition, because I know there's at least one or two people on this call that weren't on a previous call, to just kind of address that. And then at the end of the call to address some of Liz Williams' questions she raised in an email that was just sent a few hours ago. Does anybody have anything else to add to the agenda?
Jeff?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yep.
Yeah, this is Beth Fong. Just a quick point, and apologies for having posted that very late. I've sent to the list about an hour or so ago a list of elements that can be used and that I will be referring to in the course of the discussion that can serve as a guideline or as a list of questions in connection with item A.
Okay, great. Yes, I know I got that, and I know Margie has that ready to pull up when we get to certain areas.
Yeah, that's right. I have it.
Margie, the other thing is, can you at some point, because we'll probably get to it, is just have in the back pocket the new thresholds, just so you can pull it up and we can address it when we hit it.
Oh, I don't have it. I have to convert a document to this flash before I get it here, so it's not as easy. If it's in a PDF or a Word version, I won't be able to do it on this call, but I could certainly refer to it over the phone.
Okay, yeah, that'll help.
Okay.
When we get to it.
Okay.
Okay, so just a brief discussion on the transition, and just to clarify, so our last call, we spent the beginning, you know, a few minutes at the beginning of the call. I had seen on another discussion list, the council restructuring list, a posting that staff had made about changes to the bylaws that would need to be made in order to convert over to the new bicameral structure by the end of June, which is still the date, although, you know, who knows if we're going to make that date or not. The part of those changes that were in those staff documents were to, in accordance with the recommendation that was adopted by the board, was the, you know, paragraph on the new thresholds that related to things like council initiation of a PDP, you know, the voting on things that are in scope, out of scope, et cetera. There was a paragraph in there, and so before the last call, what I wanted to do was make sure that this group was aware of what was going on. It was not to push any kind of agenda. It was not to push any point of view that I have, but just make the group aware of what was going on in another forum so that we could, if we wanted to, discuss it. During that call, during that call, I believe Ken Bauer was on it, and Ken had actually said that legal counsel of ICANN was circulating around a draft of proposed amendments to Appendix A, at least internally within staff, that would need to be made just to implement those thresholds and not for any other changes. Again, it wouldn't be to come up with some interim PDP, but rather just to implement the thresholds and keep everything else the same. I'll ask Margie and sorry, my voice is kind of fading here. I'll ask Margie and Liz, have you talked to Ken about that as far as circulating that kind of draft around, or is that still internal?
Yeah, I can answer that. It's still internal, but we will, once we kind of get buy-off from legal, we'll try to distribute it. We have to coordinate with them and make sure we're okay with that.
Okay. And so also during the call, we discussed that it would not be beneficial to spend a lot of time talking about the substance of some sort of transition PDP or an interim PDP. So we decided on that last call to proceed with substantive topics, let the council and let those other groups debate what's happening with the restructuring and how they're implementing that, but to focus our calls and our attention on the new PDP, because we could easily get bogged down. And I want to make sure everyone is still in line with that thinking so that we can kind of move past it. There were a couple notes posted last week and again today, I think misinterpreting what was going on. So I just want to make sure that we're all on the same page, that we're focusing on the substance of the new PDP, and we're at this point not going to tackle or spend much more time on talking about any kind of transition item. Is that correct?
Jeff, it's Alan. My recollection, I haven't listened to the recording again, is that we decided to definitely not talk about any transition things at this point prior to the staff distributing what they considered necessary, and we were told that would be distributed to us at some point in the near future. I would think that once we have that, we should look at it and either and send a message to council saying we think it's inoffensive and there's no problem, or we see a problem with this because it doesn't implement the thresholds or whatever in the same way that we think we may be. So I think we need to give advice to council for when that goes to council. But
okay.
I hope it's not going to be, I suspect it's going to be yes, there's no problem, and it won't take a lot of time, but I don't think we should avoid looking at it since it does relate to to the task that has been given to us. I don't think that's the same as us being bogged down and spending a lot of time on it.
Okay, I think that's a fair statement. Mike or anybody else on the call, you have any thoughts on that, just so we're all...
It's Mike, yeah. I mean, I'm not sure that is exactly... That's not what this group was asked to do, actually. This group was asked to develop a long-term PDP, and what you're talking about is basically making a recommendation or not, but even considering, you know, whether to make a recommendation about something that's just an interim solution. In other words, impose voting thresholds on people that...
Mike, you're cutting out badly.
Well, okay, I'm sorry about that. I'm mobile today. I'll just take it to the list. If you can't understand me, I'm sorry about that. There's nothing I could do about it.
No, you're fine now, actually.
So all I'm saying is that you wanted to have a discussion about the voting thresholds and how to implement those, when that's really only a part of the overall solution that we're supposed to be figuring out. And I think we're just, at least in the D.C., we're completely opposed to having new thresholds put on us when we don't have the whole set of new rules worked out.
But but the thresholds will be there if we don't have a new PDP, because council cannot vote on anything without the new ones in place if the new council's in place.
So
I don't feel strongly about this. I can live with us not looking at it.
Yeah, so let me just jump in here and just say, look, at this point, today's call, we're going to focus on topic A.
Right.
Let's see what staff comes up with. We'll throw around some things on email, but Mike's correct in the sense that our goal is to focus on a long-term PDP. Alan, I think you're correct that you know, once the document comes out, you know, for example, if we see anything where a staff is recommending any other changes other than what the the whatever committee that was called, I keep forgetting the acronym, whatever was approved by the board already, that may be something or may not be something this group may want to comment on, but let's put that aside and let's go towards the substance of the long-term PDP.
Agreed.
Okay. Mike, you good with that? I will take his silence as yes. Okay. So, with that said, I did a document last night. I apologize for not sending it around sooner. And really, all I did was take the current PDP as in the bylaws and put it in where I thought it fit, and that may not be exactly where it fits, but where I personally thought it fit with the issues, you know, with the 11 issues we said that needed to be addressed for the new PDP. Again, just as to serve a guide as to where things currently fit in. I think Bertrand sent around a paper with some issues. That staff did a very thoughtful paper on a number of the issues that affect both pre-initiation and also post-development that will need to be, that should be considered by this group. With that said, I want to dive right in to the first issue, which is who has the right to initiate a request for an issues report. Currently, the PDP has three different bodies that make a recommendation to, that have the right to initiate a request for an issues report. The first one is the board can request the issues report. The second one is council can initiate an issues report by, this is again currently in the PDP, a vote of at least 25% of the members of the council present. And the third is the advisory committee can initiate an issues report. Margie, can you just go over what the new one for B would be? It's not 25% of the council members present, but the recommendation that was adopted by the board is now for, it's a certain percentage of each house, or I think it's 25% of each house or 50% of one house or something. Is that right?
Oops.
Sorry, I was on mute. It says, create an issues report requires more than 25% of both houses or a majority of one house.
Okay. So that's, so B is kind of already set for us at those thresholds. So I'm opening up the issues everyone here. So what are people's thoughts on the first issue? Who has the right to request an issues report?
Jeff, it's Marilyn. I'm so sorry I'm late. I'm just announcing I've joined the call.
Okay, thank you, Marilyn.
Hey, Jeff, it's Mike. Can I get in the queue? God, I can't see the queue.
And Alan today.
Yeah, so Mike, you're first, and if anyone else wants to be in the queue, that's on Adobe. Just
Alan. Okay, raise my hand.
Yeah. So, okay, go on, Mike.
So first of all, I'm going to deal with point three, where it's ALAC, I believe. You said advisory committee, but it's true that it's just the ALAC that can initiate one now. Is that right?
No, I believe it's any advisory committee.
Correct. It's any advisory committee. The ALAC is the only one, I think, that's taken advantage of it, but certainly the SAC or the GAC could also initiate.
Good. That's fine. That addresses my question and concern. Thanks.
Okay. Alan?
Yeah. In the brainstorming session in Mexico City, there were also comments that perhaps individuals or a, quote, stakeholder group, which is not a well-defined, which it was not clear if it was the capital stakeholder group in the GNSO or a lowercase someone around the world. I would argue against both of those. I would think that requesting an issues report and the process that follows requires a significant amount of effort. And I don't think some individual should unilaterally be able to commit ICANN to that. If you can't get the support of either 25% roughly of, or rather 50% roughly of the GNSO, or support of some advisory committee or the board, of course, then I don't think this warrants putting that kind of effort into it. So I think the current list that you've already outlined is about right, and I don't think we'd want to go down to a lot of other individuals or very focused groups unilaterally being able to request an issues report and start the process. So I would argue against changing what we have right now.
Okay, I see that James actually agrees with that. Does anyone else have a contrary opinion that we should have some other mechanism or some that other groups or entities should have a right to initiate a request for an issues report?
Jeff, it's Marilyn, and I'm not online. Can I get in the queue to ask a question?
Yes, absolutely. So you can go now.
Okay. My question is, you know, in general, I agree with what's been said, but my question is maybe an actual example. So let's say that the MOG, the Malware Working Group, has been following an issue, is not a member of a constituency, hypothetically, wants to propose an examination of an issue. Is the path for them to come to existing parties who have the standing and to petition them to raise the issue, or is the path for them to send a letter to the council asking the council to examine the appropriateness of calling for an issues report?
It's Alan. I would think any or all.
Okay. So we're not saying that a group that is not today involved cannot come forward. We're saying they should use existing mechanisms to put their positions forward into the council, which I would support. I was just trying to clarify.
We're saying that they cannot initiate the staff task of creating
right.
an issues report. That
right.
doesn't mean they can't come up with the idea.
Right. Okay. I'm fine. Thank
you. So this is Liz G. Marilyn. I think that's a really good point, though, or question. And one question I would ask is, so should that process be formalized in any way? So the way, you know, it might work today is MOG might go to the business constituency.
Right.
And discuss this. But should there conceivably be, if they didn't have, you know, a contact in the business or relationship with the business constituency, or if there was any question about what constituency might be... you know, welcome or endorse that, should there be any kind of formal way in which others could petition the council as a whole? This is just a question, because I don't think that is an informal process today or petition any particular constituency or stakeholder group.
You know, I think we have to be careful about spurious introductions of work that, you know, doesn't meet a certain threshold.
Right. Well, that would be the reason to formalize it, I think.
Ah, okay.
You know, that might be, or might be a reason to formalize it, that it has to reach some certain threshold, and it's really just a question. I'm not endorsing that at all. Because right now I just know that it's informal, so I could imagine a potentially interested group not knowing how, like what's logistically the process.
Right.
Okay.
But isn't it really the responsibility of the constituency or stakeholder group or advisory council to set up their own rules for how something may rise to that level?
Okay, so let me just, on those questions, I see some people have raised their hands.
Oh, sorry.
So let me go to Sophia and then James. Sophia?
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, I think I may have to agree with the last comment that was made in terms of formalization, because anybody outside the group of ICANN, even when we are, for example, we just set up an ITalk chapter, for example, in San Francisco, and there are people that probably want to get involved in the ICANN process of, you know, getting involved in the bringing up an issue. So, to the global level. So, what are the procedures that they have to follow? Which constituency methods they're supposed to go into? And if each constituency develops its own process, that is the second step. But even to get into how, at the first level, I think that it would be good if there is a formal process where people can identify an issue from the industry, come forth to say, you know, at which level, which is the appropriate group to get into and what kind of thing. So I think I would agree with the formalization of the process from the outreach point of view. So.
Okay, so let me go to James.
Hi, thanks, Jeff. And I wanted to agree with Sophia, and I think Alan was starting down this as well, which would be a formal process that's decentralized, and the various milestones and checkpoints or thresholds are left to the individual entities outlined here. I did have a question, however, about board-initiated issues reports and whether those are by default then turned into a PDP initiation. Is that should that not be a culmination of one of these other bottom-up approaches, or can they actually start top-down and then go through from the board to one of the advisory committees or one of the houses on the GNSO and then back up to the board? I'm just trying to understand this for letter A.
So from my understanding, and someone jump in, is that the board, if the board recommends a request and issues report, it gets done, and I believe that the account, that a PDP must be initiated.
That's correct.
It's I don't think it's ever been done that way.
No.
but that is certainly the right of the board to require a PDP be done.
Okay, and that's part of the bylaws then that is not under investigation in this particular reform effort. Is that correct?
No, it's all game right now.
Because that seems like a little bit of a backwards process, because ultimately if the issues report starts with the board, then any potential PDP would then ultimately go through the council through one of these other means.
I didn't understand that last statement. I don't know about anyone else.
Okay, it just seems like it's a little bit of a circular process. If something were to start with the board, go to one of the go to the council, and then any sort of a PDP then goes back to the board.
No, I could imagine it being used if the board ever uses its emergency powers to say, you know, we're requiring registries to implement some consensus policy. You know, but we're saying it's immediate. We're bypassing the whole process because there's a stability issue or something like that.
Okay.
One could imagine, in parallel with that, the board instructs through the PDP process for the GNSO to look at a long-term solution.
Yeah, so let me just jump in. It could be circular if the board actually took a position, but if they just threw an issue out and said, you guys discuss it and then come back to us with your recommendation, it could make sense. But to answer your first question, yeah, we could, if we wanted to, we could make a recommendation that, you know, in different steps that maybe after an issues report is produced, that the council could still have a vote as to whether to initiate a PDP. We could recommend something like that, but again, the board will be looking at all of this. So Bertrand has had his hand up, so I'd like to go to him and then to Alan.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff. A few quick points. First, to once again congratulate the staff for the excellent background paper that I encourage absolutely everybody to read, because it lists very concrete elements and distinctions. What I would like to do here is to make the distinction between raising an issue and the right to initiate the request for an issues report. The goal of the PDP in the very early stages, and our interest, is to make sure that the issues emerge as rapidly as possible, but at the same time that the staff and the community are not overburdened with processes that are initiated at any time or without proper preliminary work. So when we say raising an issue, it probably addresses a lot of the elements that have been addressed in the background paper that are basically even before the formal request for an issues paper is made. The preliminary work is very important. And in that respect, in as much as I do agree that there shouldn't be a possibility for a single individual, for instance, or even a group to initiate the request for an issues paper, there is one question that we might find beneficial to address, is how the issue itself emerges, and in that respect I would encourage you to read an excellent paper that was made by Thomas Norton, which is an RFC, I will circulate the number, on the mechanism of birds of a feather in ICF. And I think one thing we could take into account is to see whether there are mechanisms that allow a very informal discussion, early discussion of an issue before asking a full PDP to be launched in the physical meetings, for instance, like a workshop equivalent of a bird of a feather. That's the first thing, the distinction between raising an issue and initiating the request for an issues report. The second point is the distinction that is made in the background paper that I think important between the issues report, that is basically the background, and the different dimensions of the issue, and the a sort of additional preliminary report for the PDP itself. It basically points to the question of when the policy development process begins. Is it when the request for an issues report is made, or is it when the proper development of the content is being made? So, distinction between raising the issue very early stage and the initiation of the request for an issues report. I think the principles for request for an issues paper are okay. The second is issues report on the subject as opposed to what the goals of the policy development could be, and we'll come back to that later. And the last point I wanted to make quickly is I think we haven't clarified very precisely whether we're addressing a PDP for just consensus policies or for much larger policies like the new GTLD policy. Should it be a single PDP or not? This is also addressed very nicely in the background document.
Yes, and I think we'll get to that third question maybe in number two, or because I know that that comes, that might fit into a scope.
Comes into three and four, I think.
Right. So let me go back to a question. Alan's got his hand raised, but let me go back to the question. It seems like there's a number of people on the call that support some sort of formalized mechanism whereby those that are not necessarily within one of those three, you know, the board, the council, or the advisory committee, is not necessarily with, entrenched in those organizations, to come forward and to make a request for one of those three organizations to consider doing an, or requesting an issues report. And this might sound like an obvious point, but one I would ask, since we only at this, at the GNSO, we only have the jurisdiction over, that we can't require an advisory committee or the board to have some sort of intake, formalized intake procedure. We can only really do so at the GNSO level. I mean, is that the correct statement that people agree with?
Well, we're writing these rules, so we could say that an advisory committee has to have some formal rules without specifying what they are. But
or we can at least recommend it.
Yeah.
Can I get a chance for my hand up? Because I'd like to speak against what you're suggesting.
Okay, yeah, good, please. Yes, you're on.
Okay. Part of it was just that we're not in a position to legislate what other groups do. But let's introduce a touch of reality into this. If you, for instance, look at the two PDPs that were initiated through issues report through the ALAC, they didn't come out of the blue. Both of them had been discussed for years at public meetings at ICANN. And, you know, there's a long history of both actions and certainly public meetings and discussions of the issues. You know, so none of these came out of the blue and no one ever talked about it before doing an issues report. And I although I don't have a long history in the GNSO, I suspect the same is true for most GNSO issues, that they're brooding and people are talking about it and there are public sessions on it. But this is the thing that triggers some formal work and potentially some real action on the issue. So I don't think we're living in a world, not right now anyway, where these things are being done frivolously without any consultation, without any public involvement. So I don't want to overreact and formalize something. In regards to the issues that Sophia raised and followed by James, I think we're identifying that ICANN is doing a really bad job in public relations and trying to explain the organization to people. And with the new structure of the GNSO, it's just going to get worse, not better. And I think we're really saying that someone looking at ICANN from the outside doesn't have a clue what these various organizations do, what the process is to get involved, whether it's a new constituency or simply wanting to talk with these people. And I think it's an ICANN-wide issue, and it's not a PDP issue.
So, well, Alan, so then how would you address, I think it was Marilyn that first introduced, let's say it's the anti-phishing working group or some other group that wants to want an issue discussed within the ICANN arena, and or wants an issues, you know, wants someone to recommend an issues report, and let's say they don't have the personal connections that they actually do. I mean, they've been doing things through people that they know. What if they don't have the insiders to bring up that subject? And I agree with you that the PDPs in the past have been issues that have been talked about. But let's say there are issues where they don't know the insiders. Shouldn't we have some mechanism where they can introduce...
But I think that's an ICANN-wide issue. It's related to forming new constituencies or becoming part of the stakeholders group. It's an information issue of how does ICANN open itself up to the outside world, to people who are not already the insiders.
Okay.
I get the cue, Mike.
Sorry, guys. I'm hearing like multiple people talk. I heard Mike's in the queue, and then if anyone else is on, Adobe wants to raise their hand.
And yeah, I'll put myself.
And Marilyn would like to be in the queue.
I hear Mike and Marilyn.
Sophia.
Sophia. Okay, Sophia, if you could raise your hand, that would be good.
Yeah, I'm fine.
So, okay, Mike.
So we already have this. It's the ombudsman. Anybody can go to the ombudsman with a complaint, and the ombudsman's job is to figure out how to get it addressed in ICANN structure. Correct?
No.
Okay,
so, all right, Mike, do you have any other, I mean, that's, so without
no,
throwing
I'd
that.
Like to, no, I'd like to hear if I'm wrong on that.
Well, could we just keep going through the queue?
Yeah, right, that's what I'm trying to do. So, Mike, do you have any other points to your question, and then hopefully people will address it? And do you have any other points?
No, thanks.
Okay, I have Marilyn.
I will lend support to Alan's perspective that awareness about ICANN is a gap at a macro level and also at a SO level. But my experience is that it doesn't actually work to have the present approach of the marketing communications people. No, that's, they call themselves the corporate communications people to handle this. It needs to be there needs to be a further focus on awareness and outreach, and then a process by which people can filter themselves into existing organizations, sub-organizations within the SO. So that's one point. But my second point is participation is different than joining, and I think we need to be open to participation in a structured way and a responsible way beyond whether people actually formally join a constituency in the SO or the ALAC in order to raise an issue. But I keep caveating that with in a responsible way because I don't think it's a floodgate. I think it has to be qualified in some way. Otherwise, we're going to see ICANN staff bombarded with the need to protect kids online, just as an example.
Okay, Sophia, I think you were next.
Yeah. I think what I'm trying to make a point with, in terms of the ombudsman, I think the ombudsman carries or is a way of, you know, presenting a complaint versus an issue. An issue doesn't necessarily have to be a complaint. An industry issue is simply stuff that in the past when we worked, people have approached us as policy advisors, and they say this is an issue that ICANN has overlooked or has never paid attention to. It's almost
you know, it's us to guide people to say, okay, there's a constituency that's probably best suited to address this, so go to this constituency, and probably that's the best way to raise it. I mean, what we're saying is, why don't we have a mechanism or a formal documentation that says, you know, when someone comes to ICANN, present, depending on the issue, go to this constituency and create that. It's a few liners, but this is directly related to the macro level that Marilyn mentioned, and also to the ICANN level. We need to have to tie in the corporate goals with the work that we do. So in that sense, there has to be a relationship with the policy development process, which is a process that recommends to the board on serious issues to be made by ICANN. So therefore, I think ignoring that, you know, gap, again, is not a responsible way or a transparent way of doing our operation. So this is my comment.
Okay. So let me there's no one in the queue, at least on Adobe. Let me kind of just summarize where we are on number one right now, just to see if this is a correct statement. So I think those in the group agree that the current three mechanisms of raising an issue to request an issues report, the three mechanisms are through the board, through the council, which will be replaced actually in the new structure, through the houses.
Still through the council.
Through the council, right, but it'll... Correct, sorry, misstated, right. And then through an advisory committee, that this group is still of the opinion that those are the three mechanisms that we agree upon, but there's a question that we need to explore further as to whether to formalize the process for those that may not be members, and I use the term members loosely, of those three groups. Is that an accurate statement?
Could you repeat that, Jeff? Sorry about that.
Sure. That the group exists of three current mechanisms for raising an issue, with three ways, and I'm not saying this very well, the three different mechanisms to raise an issue are currently through the board, the council, and the advisory committee, that should be retained, that model. However, there's a question we still need to work on, which is whether to formalize a process for those that may not be members of one of those three organizations.
Jeff, this is Jeff Hong.
Right, Jeff Bertrand.
May I slightly modify what you just said by saying that there are three ways for requesting an issues report, and that what we're thinking about doing, that there are possibilities to explore further the modalities for raising an issue within the different ACs or the SOs. This would introduce the distinction I was making earlier.
I think that's accurate. I think that's good. Is there anyone comment on that?
I don't understand that part. The modalities are the breakdowns of for each constituency, exactly how they are going to handle it. Is that what we're saying?
No, I think what Bertrand is saying, that the three ways to request an issues report, the three ways are for requesting an issues report are always going to be through the board, the council, or the advisory committee.
Right.
But the question is how to raise an issue within one of those three organizations so that they could discuss it and decide whether or not to request an issues report.
Mike Rodenbaugh, can I get in the queue?
Let me just see if
I was in the queue and someone even gave me the microphone.
Okay, hold on a sec. Let me just make sure, Sophia. Does that address your question?
Didn't address it, but I'm following the process. So let's hear what everybody's saying, and I'll come back to you, Mike.
Okay, so I'm going to go to Alan, and then I'm going to go to Mike.
Okay, I started off, and I think there was general agreement that we want to be careful not to put a load on staff by anyone being able to request an issues report. I think we want to be slightly cautious that we don't do the same thing to the various organizations, including the GNSO and the advisory committees, that is bind them to, and I'll use an extreme thing, listening to any, you know, crazy who comes along and demands that their idea be considered. So just as there's limits on staff, there's also limits on what the GNSO can handle and what the advisory committees can handle and things like that. So we need to be cautious if we try to formalize this too much.
Okay. Mike?
I agree completely with what Alan just said. I was going to make some of those points myself. It's very easy, really, for anybody to join some constituency within the GNSO or to join some organization that's part of the ALAC and thereby get their issue raised. If it's not worth it to them to do that, it's not worth the council's time to consider them, their issue, in my opinion. Council is extremely overworked already, and anything that adds to that work without having some sort of formal process through an existing constituency would be completely unnecessary and foolish in my mind.
I'll point to you don't have to get a constituency's attention. You have to get a person's attention.
That's right.
Okay.
Not that hard to do.
Sorry, guys. I just want to try to stick to the queue if I could. Yeah. Liz?
I was going to ask whether it would be appropriate to distinguish in our speaking about whether we're asking to clarify the process for raising an issue versus creation of the issues report. Because, as I think we alluded to in the staff paper, there's the thought that maybe we shouldn't start with an issues report as the first thing that happens in this process of inquiry into an issue. So my suggestion, but it's, you know, it's, or question is, shouldn't we be talking about who raises an issue at this stage and how, rather than who requests an issues report? Because I'd like to hope that we could, that it's premature to assume that the first step is launching the issues report.
Hey, hold on, guys, if you want to be in the queue, like, raise your hand, or if you're on a phone, then just let me know.
It's Mike. Back in the queue, please.
Okay, let me just try to, before we kind of go in a circle here, what we're doing here is kind of going in the order that the questions are, Liz. So
right.
I agree with you that that is something that we should address, and it's probably what other speakers are lined up to talk about. But before we get into that, I want to see if we can take this apart in pieces and then move on. So I want to note your question. I think we need to discuss it.
Excellent. Thank you.
So let me go to Sophia, then Alan, and then Mike. So Sophia.
Yeah. I think again, I have to agree with Liz on this as to separation of who is to raise the issue versus who raises the issues report. The issues report to be raised can come from the constituencies. Again, I will caution that we still need to have some sort of communication strategy as to who raises an issue, and then if not who raises, we can't dictate that, but as to how issues are raised and where that person or individual should go. It is not about a crazy person coming from the street. It is the constituencies for internet governance is beyond ICANN. So again, you know, we all know that ICANN has gone, you know, been a lot of issues has not been introduced to ICANN because the voices have not been heard. So I think to be inclusive of the global community, we still need to have a process that links the who is the one to raise the how a person is supposed to raise an issue in what constituency. That is a communication strategy and somehow needs to be linked to the work we do. If it's policy advice that we're giving, then we still need to have a process to identify that.
Okay, and then I have Alan and then Mike.
I guess I'll say what I said before. This is largely in response to Liz's comment. If someone can point me to an issue which got to the level of an issues report before it had been reasonably well discussed in at least some parts of the organization, I'd like to know what it is. I don't think it's happening right now in general.
Fast Books would be an example.
And
right.
there was a lot of discussion within an advisory committee, as a matter of fact.
Okay,
right.
So Alan, Sorry, I'm trying
to... I think we're trying to solve a problem that isn't there in terms of the let's not have an issues report until we until the issue has been discussed.
Okay, let me go to Mike and then Bertrand.
I just completely agree with Alan again on that. I was just going to clarify my earlier comments. I think Alan's were to Liz's and Bertrand's point that it should not be so easy for somebody to raise an issue at the GNSO without having without having participated in a working group or in a constituency or in an ALAC organization.
I think I have no problem with that, Jeff, Mike, and so forth. I'm not saying people should be raising issue directly at the GNSO level. I'm saying even the communication strategy for people to raise an issue, create the working group, and discuss is not there. And I'm just saying that should be part of the documentation that we need to have. It is not to bring a simple issue or a serious issue all the way to GNSO level. I'm saying the communication strategy at the bottom should be documented.
Okay, let me go over to Bertrand.
Yeah,
very, very quickly. I agree with the distinction that Sophia was formulating. This is exactly what I meant, and she's formulating it better. I think the dialogue between Liz and Alan are actually not targeted exactly at the same thing. When Alan says any issue has been discussed at length within ALAC or within the SOs and so on, I think he's perfectly right. And in a certain way, what we're trying to do here is actually to go in the other direction and reverse the situation where we are speaking about an issue for ages before something starts, because there is no actual catalytic process that says, well, this is an issue of interest for the community. So before you manage to get the conviction of an SO or an AC, this notion of getting a sort of sensitive mass and how people should aggregate support for bringing an issue forward is an issue more to accelerate the taking up of important issues than to have a filtering for the unnecessary ones. And I do agree that Liz has a point in saying and asking the question, is the issues report the first step? Or is there any preliminary, very informal document that can come from a community or as the output of a workshop, for instance? This is why I was mentioning the notion of birds of a feather. I think when people are interested in an issue they want to see raised, one of the good ways is to try to have a mechanism whereby they can have an informal gathering of key actors so that they can document the fact that an issue is important. But I agree that the notion of an issues report may not be the very first step. I hope I'm clear, because it's an evolving thought.
Yeah, so actually, let me, if anyone else, does anyone else have a comment on that?
I do, Jeff. It's Marilyn.
Okay, Marilyn.
Thank you. I just want to add, though, a voice of rationality here in terms of, we use the term issues within the ICANN GNSO policy, and I think we need to make that distinction, as having a specific meaning, and that is an issue related to GTLD policy and therefore suitable to be addressed in a PDP. The dictionary word issue is a broader term, and it's very possible that across ICANN there would be interest in learning about a issue without it actually belonging into a PDP process within the GNSO Policy Council. So I just want to be careful that we are really clear that we can talk about the broader issue, but that's not what we're working on in relation to the PDP process, and we would want to refer any further elaboration on examining how the broader issue is addressed external to this working group.
Okay. So I think what we're actually starting to do, and it kind of the discussion naturally went there, is we started with the question of who, and we kind of get into the question of what, and we're kind of relating those two together. In other words, we were trying to talk about who can request an issues report, and then we kind of delved into a conversation of what should be required to be in an issues report, or really what is an issues report. So, I mean, I guess since the conversation is sort of taking us there, why don't we, Marilyn kind of took us there a little bit too, as far as what are the issues that can rise to the level of requesting an issues report, and I think that's something that Liz had talked about as well. Would it be helpful for the group to kind of continue down that path, or to just put that aside, keep it in the back of our minds, and then go to issue two, which is the procedures for requesting an issues report, although that might be kind of jumping the gun?
Jeff, I think we've been talking about two for a long time now. We agreed, I think we had general agreement, that the formal request for an issues report, the right set, the current set is probably the right set. And we've gone on to what are the steps in doing that.
Right.
It's been
related to the who, in the sense of, you know, it started out with a discussion of who outside of those three, and then kind of turned morphed into what. So I want to continue down that path, but I kind of want to put a little bit of structure around it. Liz brought up a point about, and actually Bertrand did as well, with the analogy to the birds of the feather with the IETF. Do people have thoughts on, should there be any other requirements or things that should happen before an issue rises to the level of an entity requesting an issues report? In other words, are there things that they need, steps they need to go through or not before making that request?
And I'd like to be in the queue with Marilyn.
Okay, so Marilyn, let's start a queue. Marilyn, you can go, and anybody who's on Adobe, if you could kind of raise your hand. So Marilyn.
Thank you. I'm repeating things that I have said before, so I'll make this brief. I am on the record as saying that we need to start the PDP process. And in fact, the exploration of an issue with a well-researched, well-documented white paper, and probably a informational workshop that would examine the issues from a variety of perspectives. Such documents should be suitable for consumption by all parties within ICANN, meaning the GAC, the board, the broader community, the ALAC, the members of constituencies, to educate them about an issue. I would think of these papers as looking more like the OECD scoping papers, and I'd be happy to forward a scoping paper to the group if there's interest in looking at it. This implies a significant increase in the role of staff in doing analytical research and in drawing on experts to write a scoping paper, including, where appropriate, having access to legal support and to economic support. And I think, in general, an issue should be explored in that way before it makes its way into what we think of as the issues report within the PDP process.
Okay, let me just clarify. So your point is that, just to clarify, your recommendation is that staff take this responsibility on, that it shouldn't be the responsibility necessarily of the party that wants to see it. Lost my thought. Your recommendation is that it's staff that's responsible for that paper.
So Jeff, the idea, let me use an example. So let's say that Marilyn Cade decided she wanted to write a brief white paper explaining to ICANN the importance of doing a who is study. That's just an example, so I'm using a real example. She could certainly write, as she did a few years ago, a 2 or 3 page paper, but I don't think it's appropriate to ask Marilyn Cade to organize a balanced workshop that is 2 or 3 hours in length and cuts across all perspectives, nor to expect Marilyn Cade, although she might be capable of doing so, to engage an economist and write a detailed scoping paper about an issue. So issue here, I'm struggling with using the word issue here, because issue means something specific within the TLD PDP process.
Okay, let me just last one more clarifying, and then I want to throw that out, those concepts out to everyone else. Did you say that there should be both a white paper and a workshop, or were you, what's your recommendation on that?
So I would think that depending on the topic, and I'm going to use the term topic for this purpose, I would think depending on the topic, there should be a range of suitable processes that could be undertaken. So a workshop which presented, so if you do a white paper, you still probably need to do a workshop on the information that is in the white paper and allow a discussion and dialogue about it. It might be that you could, on certain topics, do webinars instead of a face-to-face workshop. But in general, we ought to front-load the examination of the topic rather than putting it into a process where we then are dependent upon positions and opinions. And in the later stages of the PD process, that's what we have been dependent on.
Okay. I have two people, so I'll throw it out to Sal Bertrand. Margie, do you have a substantive point, or is it...
I have a question from Marilyn, so just put me in the queue.
Okay, so let me go to Bertrand, and then I'll go to Margie.
Just to support in large part what Marilyn was saying on two points. The first is the distinction between when we're talking about consensus policies, i.e. things that are embedded in the agreements with registries and that are updated through the PDP and become implementable and enforceable. And the second thing is the more general policy development, i.e. the policy for developing new GDLDs, for instance. This is an important distinction, and I think at the moment, and I put it in the paper I circulated, we are probably concentrating mostly on the consensus policy part. The second thing is, she uses the expression scoping. I think it clearly addresses the notion of highlighting the dimensions of an issue as early as possible. White papers can be produced by a diversity of contributors, but the notion of preliminary workshops, either online or at a physical event, is important. And maybe afterwards, just after that workshop, a very brief summary of the main dimensions of an issue can be done before getting into a full research. But the notion of having a first exchange where the constituencies do not basically prepare a very rigid position before discussing the issue or the topic with the other actors is very important. So dimensions and scoping is very important.
Okay, Margie?
Sure, and this is a question that follow up on Marilyn's point. Marilyn, what's the timing, do you think, in the example of OECD, to prepare the white paper and the workshop? I guess one of the thoughts I have in exploring that is I'd like to see whatever examples you can come up with and understand what that does to the timing of setting an issue, you know, getting an issue report started, because it looks like it could delay the process quite a bit. And then my other point is if staff is to write a white paper, and workshops sound like, you know, great ideas, and research, one of the concerns I think we've had in the past is that sometimes the staff doesn't have enough information yet, and, you know, and the end product may not be, you know, as fully researched as the community would expect. And so I just wanted to kind of understand the timing, you know, at least in the OECD example.
So I'll let me suggest that, in fact, in the past, and for the record, I was a policy counselor elected by the BC for a number of years, and also prior to that did chair the first two task force and the transfer task forces. So I just want to say that I'm extremely familiar with the work, and I note that we typically have rushed to into launching a policy development process, and then found ourselves in the long process where we have to do all the research after the fact. So what I'm suggesting, I don't think will in the long run change the length of time devoted to a policy development process. I think it will front load when the work is done in a more neutral, analytical fashion. So that's one point I would make, Marjorie. A scoping paper can be 25 pages long, or it can be 150 pages long, depending on the topic. And scoping papers can involve outreach to 20 experts or to 100 experts, depending on the topic. So again, you know, I would say think about the concept, and then if members of the group find it interesting, think about the adjustment of the concept to fit the needs of the PDP process. But I just want to make one point about the value of taking this approach. We often find ourselves in a situation where the GAC tells us, and I think, Alan, sometimes some of the ALAC members tell us, that it's very difficult to go back, and we have this problem as well within the business user community. It's very difficult to go back to the group that you're representing or advising, if it's an association or et cetera, and say, we're going to talk about this topic, and they say, send me the briefing paper. So the other value of taking this approach is the GAC has a document to distribute internally to its in its various national interagency processes. Members of associations have a paper to distribute to their company members, and it starts the education process about the topic much earlier. It is more intensive in staff work, which would mean it's going to take more than 10 days.
Right, so let's, well, without touching on the timing at this point, well, at least specific with 10 days, Bertrand, did you have, I can't tell if you actually have lowered your hand or whether you actually have a, do you have another comment or?
No, but if I can, just one point.
Okay.
About the lengthening of the process. I think Alan made the point. The current mechanism is that there is a lot of time wasted at the moment before we actually address something. And I think what Marilyn is suggesting, and especially the notion of briefing paper, is a nice way to move forward to actually formalize the issues and the topics earlier in the process, which brings education and awareness and actually gains time.
Okay. Alan, do you have a comment on that?
Yeah, well, I have two comments. Number one, I think to some extent we've lost sight of what the concept of an issues report was. That is, the time frames in the current bylaws are very short, which implied it was not an in-depth research project, but the attempt by staff to scope it out and put some realism on it to temper what the GNSO or advisory committee might have felt in terms of what the scope is. So I think it was designed as the initial document, not necessarily the definitive one from which you could run off and immediately do the PDP process, which implies that maybe the steps after the issues report or at the beginning of the PDP process have to be looked at more. The other aspect is we're also getting into an in-depth discussion of what I would consider best practices. Now, yes, we have had some PDPs that have not worked well. FastFlux may well have been one of them. There are likely to be failures in any process. We're talking about best practices. If you want to initiate something which leads to a PDP, here are some things that you might want to do which put you in a better position. And I know certainly in some of the cases of recent PDPs, that has been done. There were briefing papers. There were mini white papers done prior to the issues report being requested. So I think we want to try to differentiate between things we're putting in the law and best practices which will yield good results.
Okay, let me, it looks like David's in the queue. Yes.
Hi.
David Monner?
I'm sorry. I was not in the queue.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Someone gave you the microphone. So that. Sorry about that. Okay. So Alan, let me throw out a question to you then. So, is it your view that what's current would you what changes would you recommend, or would you recommend any changes to?
I would not recommend changes prior to what we are calling the issues report. I would try to reiterate that the issues report is a very first cut, however, and there may be steps after it prior to the decision on to initiate a PDP or as a first step of a PDP to meet the cases where, I mean, right now staff makes recommendations in the issues report saying this is really too vague, we need more work done first. Council can listen to that advice or not, but I think that's the place where staff should be getting the first crack at saying this is just not ready for prime time yet, or it's something we can go ahead with.
So would that?
I thought that was the purpose of the issues report.
So well, putting aside the terminology or what we call issues report, do you see any issues with what Marilyn has suggested? Again, putting aside what we call it. But Marilyn has suggested a briefing paper, which could be the, which is asking for a little bit more detail, or a scoping paper. I mean, I don't necessarily hear opposing views. You're just talking about what we call it, in essence.
I'm saying that I don't think we should be putting additional hurdles, especially ones that staff may have to do prior to the issues report.
Or to prior what we call now an issues report. If
we are now called, well, yeah. I mean, we can rename everything.
Right. So
but that doesn't change the process. I think once a concept has been initiated by a body with standing within ICANN, there should be a moderately quick, you know, whether 15 days is the right number, I'm not going to debate, but a moderately quick opportunity for staff to review the issue and make some comments.
So let me
to have to put a huge threshold before it gets to that stage, I think is ill-advised. It goes back to, you know, we're going to be talking continuously or looking for resources to do it.
Now let me ask kind of a question related to that to Marilyn, since she's the one who brought up these ideas. Marilyn, is it your view that this should happen prior to, you know, we talked about who would request an issues report. Would it be your recommendation that all this stuff happen before the council actually makes a request for an issues report, or after?
You know, let me just say that I don't have a problem with the idea that you go through a process that you now call the issues report. But think of what you're doing. You're screening an issue to determine its applicability to a PDP and to scope it. I don't have a problem with putting the work I'm proposing after an initial high-level issues identification paper. I just think that based on my experience, and I will also say based on my experience in working in a number of other international settings, that we are shortchanging the analytical analysis that is needed in developing policy, and we're shortchanging the educational aspect. And that means we're shortchanging who can effectively participate in the working groups, which is not something you want to do. You want to create an educated environment so that you have a wealth of interested participants in the working group process. And if you don't educate about the process fairly up front and analyze fairly up front and neutrally, you're making it an old boys and old girls club. Just let me, you know, because it's only the initiated who can participate and will participate. That just doesn't work. That's not sustainable for the long term.
Okay, so I'm still trying to fit this into the, or maybe recommend against it, but I'm just trying to figure out where it fits in, Marilyn, with...
So sorry, Jeff. So I don't have a problem with putting it after an initial high level. You know, so you might think about this in this way, and this I'm modifying my thinking as we go, which is the benefit of these calls.
Right.
You might think of this in this way. The first issues report becomes the executive summary to the rest of the work. and you do the rest of the scoping paper. So you do the executive summary, the council reviews it, makes a go, no go, assigns resources, identifies, you figure out if you need legal research, you need academic research, you need technical research, you need economic research, you figure out what resources you need is, and then you do the full-blown, what I would call scoping, maybe I'll stop calling it a scoping paper, but then you do the full-blown document, which researches both the parts that are going to be inside the PDP and the parts that are outside and are ecosystem factors but are relevant to know about.
Okay, I'm trying to think of in my own mind. So you would have the council would request this. Now you're calling it kind of an exec, let's call it a briefing paper, which you would think would be kind of like an exec summary to the rest of the work. At that point, the council gets it again. You said to decide to go, no go. Would that be go, no go to do a formal PDP or go, no go to do the next issues report, which is much more in depth?
Right, and I would say go no, you know, the normal path would be go forward with the rest of the work. That'd be the normal path. And then you do the full-blown analysis I've been talking about at that stage, and you put it out for public comment, you hold the workshop or the webinar, you give the paper to the GAC, to the ALAC, distribute it widely. Everybody reads it, understands it, and comes back with comments, and the council then would be making a decision at that point. I think they'd make a decision about whether it goes into a PDP or it's not PDP suitable.
So that would be, just to clarify, and then I got a couple people who for some reason have microphones by their name as opposed to raising their hands. I don't know how that happens.
Someone must be doing it.
So you're basically saying at that point, that's when they would do the scope, the out of scope, in scope for a capital C consensus policy according to the contract or not. So what I got from you is the one of those three groups, whether it's the council, the board, or the advisory committee, but let's take the council at this point, requests this type of briefing paper, which would serve, as you put, kind of an executive summary of the for the rest of the work. The council would then again get that and do a go-no-go for a more in-depth analysis paper.
Right, and Jeff, at that point, the council is going to need to make some resource assessments. This looks to us like it's going to require significant amounts of bylaw changes, so we're going to have internal legal support. Oh, this looks to us like it's highly technical, so we need to be sure there are technical experts engaged in this. Oh, this looks, example.
And then you would have, just so I'm getting it straight, your recommendation would be that would go out, that paper that they produced would go out for public comment, and then the council would take that paper and then go through all the kinds of things that we now consider, would then do a go-no-go on a formal PDP to figure out solutions and
right.
All wonderful stuff, creation of a working group, all that wonderful stuff that comes later on. And
right.
Assuming at that point, that's when at what point would you have the general counsel or whoever make some sort of determination as to whether that fits into a consensus policy or something other than...
So I think after the first robust public comment, the staff would do an analysis of the public comments and the staff would make a recommendation, and then it should, at that point, so let's say that staff recommends this is PDP suitable. I have to have another word. This is PDP suitable, right? And so our recommendation is it's PDP suitable. We've had it reviewed by the General Counsel, and just to use PDP 06 as an example, which I was a part of, you know, the staff came back and said the General Counsel recommends against doing this, and the Council said, we disagree with you, and we're going to do this work based on a majority vote of the Council. So it would be, that's when you would do that process. But the staff summary should both summarize the comments and present the resource recommendation. And when I say staff summary, I am assuming significant involvement of the council, you know, working with the staff. I'm just not assuming that we are in the days we used to be in when I was chairing task forces, when the chair of the task force wrote all the reports, or we had individual members appointed to write the reports. I appointed editors. I mean, you know, we're in a very different world. So I don't want to be seen as saying this is intensely and only staff. I think it is staff with support, involvement, and participation of the counselors.
Okay, so let me, there's a lot there. Alan and then Bertrand, so, and Liz, I can't tell if you're in the queue or just...
No.
Could someone help me remove the microphones except for Alan?
Margie is listed as the conference leader, so I assume she can.
Okay. So, Alan, I'm going to turn it over to you right now.
Okay. Two comments. Number one, in one of your interjections, you said that we're talking about consensus policies, that is, things that alter registrar registry contracts. At this point, that's a question that we ask much later on, and I would like to keep this conversation on policy development, not necessarily consensus policies, because right now it's not limited to that. So I don't think I heard Marilyn say that she was commenting specifically on consensus policies as opposed to policy development. The substantive comment that I was going to make, however, is what is being described to a large extent is in fact what we are doing now. The current bylaws say within 15 days after an issues report is issued by the staff that the council must decide yay or nay on a PDP. Well, currently we're probably sitting at 4 to 5 months, and it varies heavily depending on what the particular issue is. In general, once an issues report is discussed by council, which may take many months, it will varyingly go to a drafting team or a working group or a something or other, depending on how well it's perceived that the issue is understood. Some of them go very quickly to a PDP, relatively so. Other ones have sat around for a year in various groups, which often issue things for public comment. So right now we're using a wide variety of mechanisms post-issues report, depending on the substance of the particular issue being discussed. And I think I think that's going to have to be enshrined in whatever policy we come up with. That is, there is an opportunity for processes. I'd hate to see it legislated that all of these steps must be taken in every case, however. I think council has to have some discretion for making a decision on, you know, in conjunction with what staff has said in the issues report, for are we ready for prime time or does this need a lot more homework?
So can I ask you then, because I think that's an important point, obviously not on this call, but probably requires some thought. All the things that we discussed and other things that we're doing today, could you on email, I guess, kind of boil that down into things that you think should be, I don't want to use your term, but you said legislated, should be formalized in some sort of policy as steps versus things that you think the council should have some flexibility on? Is that?
I can certainly try. I mean, but I'm telling you right now, I think flexibility is one of the keys, and I think we want to have options that might be done. We want best practices lists, but I think we need to maintain the flexibility where for the council to pick which are the appropriate steps in this case. And as I said, the rules that have been developed on the fly in the last couple of years end up doing that, perhaps less formal than some people would like, but that's effectively what's happening now as I read things.
Okay, and I think and that might help, Margie and Liz, if we could kind of document in short form some of the things, and these examples are, you know, they're mentioned in your briefing paper, maybe not examples, but if we can come up with some short description of what the last few ones have gone through to kind of give everyone on this working group an understanding of some of those things that Alan's talking about.
I mean, maybe we need, you know, another example of different thresholds that if you know, right now we have different thresholds depending on whether the issues paper says it's within GNSO scope or outside the GNSO scope, and PDP 6 is the class example. Maybe we need yet another set of thresholds of, you know, whether you can do this PDP, initiate this PDP prior to significant additional research or not. The council can override it with a large enough vote, but staff is making a recommendation that this is really, really needed to do the job properly. So, you know, that's another example of a way that we can implement it, but keep level of flexibility.
Okay, I see Bertrand, I know he had his hand up, so now it's a microphone, so I'll give you the mic. Bertrand?
Okay, thank you. Just to build up on the exchange with Marilyn and Alan, I think we're heading in the right direction. What I see is at the moment, Alan made the point that what we call an issues report could be considered as an early thing relatively close to the early briefing paper and educational paper that Marilyn was referring to. The second point is in the document, the background document from the staff in paragraph 6.5, there is a comment saying that the preparation should be more extensive than just this preliminary issues report, and in particular the discussion of whether this is worthy of a PDP or within scope of a PDP is the last element before we move actually in the PDP, and this could be, for instance, a staff recommendation on, in particular, the goal of a PDP following the discussions that have taken place in between. And in between, according to needs, as Alan said, the additional research that might be needed could be decided on an ad hoc basis or the setting of a working group depending of the amplitude of the work. So in the current bylaws, we have something that mentions only the issues report and at least an A, B, C, D, E, F that contains both the first part I was mentioning and the second one, i.e. the very early issues report and the recommendation for doing the PDP. What about separating those two and saying the initial phase of a PDP is launched by the production of a short issues report by the staff that would have the A, B, C, and D, like the issue raised for consideration, the identity of the party submitting the issue, how that party is affected by the issue, and actually not D, sorry, and another element that would replace D that would be a description, a brief description of the different dimensions of the issue, period. That's the issues report.
Can you, sorry to interrupt, can you just explain what you mean by different dimensions?
It's the scoping aspect, like what are the different elements and the different perspectives on this issue.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
And the end of the preparation phase, the initiation phase, would be a staff-produced recommendation on the opportunity to launch a formal PDP with a few elements, including what is currently D, currently E. It's already called the staff recommendation, by the way, and the F, which is actually sending it to the council. And in between, or after those two elements, some line would say additional research can be decided on an ad hoc basis by the council in order to nurture the preliminary process. And I think this embodies the three dimensions that both Alan and Marilyn has mentioned.
Okay, does anyone have thoughts on that? Okay, let me, I think we've kind of talked about one and two. We've actually touched on a lot of the different elements. I'm trying to think if, because I know this call was really scheduled just for an hour and a half, because I know people have to leave. I think this might be a good point to just stop, get some, and then just implore people to, I'm going to ask staff to take, to document the notes. I took notes, and I know other people have. If people could, if staff could summarize the notes from this call, and then I think the next thing is to schedule another call for the rest of A, because I think once we get through this, the rest of A seem kind of, we touch on most of A within what we've already talked about. So I would recommend sending a doodle out for next week, if we can, for finishing up A. Does anybody have any comments on that?
Oh, sounds good.
I think we've made some good progress, and I think once we take the notes and convert it into writing, I think we're going to see some that we've made that progress. I'm going to ask everyone, although people didn't submit it this last week, if people could submit comments that they have on what we discussed and also answers to the other questions for A, topic A, if you could submit that over email, because I think we're missing that email dialogue. And I think that would really be helpful. I mean, we make good progress during the calls, but we really need to kind of have discussions go through the list. Any other questions or comments?
Yeah, Jeff, this is Sophia. Can I just bring that up to what you just said at the last minute on the emails? I mean, again, if probably staff could summarize what occurred today and circulate it, maybe that's a starting point for all of us. It's just so hard to get engaged in an email if there's nothing that's sort of passing through. That's probably what happened last week. I'm just suggesting that because I suggested the same week as well, and nothing happened.
Yeah, so let's. I'll ask. I don't know if Margie and Liz, if when we think we can get out some notes, but hopefully, obviously, the sooner the better.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Maybe what we'll do is we'll set up the doodle after we get that paper out.
Something like
okay.
that.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? I think this has been a great discussion. I think once we get this document, I think we'll see. I think we made a lot of progress. I hope other people have as well.
Yeah, that was good, Jeff. Thanks.
Okay,
thanks for your
everyone.
Leadership.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Bye.